Well, it's now a discussion. I didn't want to give yet another 2PI talk because you have several ones. I'll try to, well, after a kind of repetition of the most important thing or selection of the most important things, I would concentrate on some practical issues. What we actually do, how we do, what we can do, what we could do if we had big enough computers and so on. So, or favorite toy or machinery or organizing principle is a two-particle irreducible effective action, which we really like because it has some important feature. And one of those is that approximation doesn't break down with time. Down as time goes to infinity. And because of that, it is suitable for the description of late time behavior, which is typically thermal, or if it's not thermal, then some other interesting solution, such as a non-thermal fixed point. And
well, finally, it's always thermal so far.
Well, depending on how you define late time. Late time, as long as you can wait, or infinite. So this, well, good. So and another point is that it is well controlled. So we had a pretty good understanding what diagrams are there, what mechanisms we need, diagrams we need for certain physical phenomena. And we are not restricted to a loop expansion or small coupling expansion. And a nice example was the 1 over n expansion, which was used for scalar series. One can also use for QCD, where n is then the number of flavors. And then it's, a description is really adequate what 2PI gives.
So what's the small parameter in terms of which you control it?
Well, it depends on what model you are interested in. So if it's a scalar theory, it can be the coupling if you think that the theory is somewhat weakly coupled. The term weakly coupled is not clearly defined. With the so of course, when you keep some diagrams in the 2PI effective action to a certain order, you restrict the phenomena that you want to describe. And weak coupling expansion means that you say that, oh, I need this phenomena and I don't need others because they are suppressed. In hot QCD, for example, you still have the coupling, which you could believe to be small. It is small for very high temperatures. And then you say that some diagrams will be unimportant for processes and others will be important. You decide which diagrams you want to put in, and you see how many diagrams you keep in a 2PI or 3PI or whatever effective action. In the 1 over n expansion for scalars, there was a...
Just this question, I mean, what's wrong with the 1 over n expansion? Or
probably if n is 1 over n is a small parameter.
Right. Good. So then you have to check, and there are numerical checks, how small 1 over n should be. And yes, if it's about 1 over 4 or even 1 over 10, of course, comparison, no, I have to write here, there were several comparisons with classical statistical field theory. One very important one was with Zimbergis. It was in, help me, 01.
I think the question was different, right?
Was it?
My question was very approximate. I mean, you say that something is controlled. I want to see how it is controlled. And actually, I don't think 1 over n is very good, since nobody can calculate a leading term. I mean, n goes to infinity term.
You're thinking of Yang-Mills theory and so I was just thinking of vector models.
Yeah. Well, you can.
I'm thinking of physics, let's say. I guess. Physics is applications.
And in vector models, why can't you compute the leading order?
You
can even compute the next leading Euler vector.
I always thought that nobody can do n equals infinity. The master, famous master field, nobody can solve it.
Well, that's just
you're talking about two different things.
Yes.
Oh, it seems so, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
you're talking about, gauge theories or matrix models.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there are vector models, which where large n is easy.
Good.
And one can go to next to leading order.
Oh, yeah, that is that kind of large n. Yeah, yeah.
Now, of course, yes. Even in vector models, there are, if I think about thermal physics, there are time scales which diverge with n. So when you say you have an approximation that works well at late times, I mean, even there, it's subtle because it depends on what questions you're asking.
Yeah, so even with a, well, good. So if I just take the, probably it's not what you really have in mind, but if I take the leading order, then, for example, termalization time would be infinite. If I take a better approximation or one higher, then that is already a finite time. And
I think it's just in principle one could go to next to leading order and capture that physics. But I guess this is the point of today's talk to see whether one can do that, right?
Yes, one of them. Good. So all right, let's decide that we keep some of the diagrams and try to give an account of the non-equilibrium evolution. What 2pi calculates, so the variable of 2pi is the propagator, which in most cases, of course, all propagator can depend on two coordinates, and I write the time separately because we are interested in real-time evolution in these time coordinates. And if we have spatial translation symmetry, then we can make a Fourier transform in space only, and then this is the actual thing that we calculate. Well, usually it is not a very good idea to talk about particles because particles are just exist in our mind. These are just some fitting parameters of the propagator. But if you really want to imagine little particles flying around, then this propagator could tell you how many are them. So this is the propagator, the value of the propagator calculated at equal times gives you a rough estimate of a kind of quasi-particle at a certain momentum. And since you can calculate the full evolution of this object, let's have a plot. So this would be time, and here you can calculate this, let's call it GTTK, and let's K be some fixed momentum, and you will find some behavior. Of course, it doesn't tell you really much about what's going on unless you compare it to the other momentum or another initial condition. So let's pick another one. This was GA, and GB should be evaluated at the same momentum and the same times. The A initial condition shall correspond to a spectrum like this, and for the B case, we could have something like that. And if we just compare this momentum, then this B initial condition will start from here. And what we will find is a curve like that. And this we have seen in various models, scalar theories or scalar plus fermion theories. It reveals the most important time scale in the particular model. So let's see what kind of time scale. So we have here, there's a very short one, and this is really dominated by the microscopical physics, so it's microscopical timescape. I will just say a mu here. There is some dephasing going on there, and really, things depend on the very details of the initial condition. Here there is a smooth evolution, and this is a longer time scale. This has something to do with the relaxation time. And the two propagators or particle numbers get pretty close to each other. And there is a longer time scale, which will be a slow thermalization. So why is this slow and why this is fast? So this can be an order, or first order scattering. And there is a next to leading order effect or off-shell effect that we observe here. The time scale for this first order processes, so basically two particles collide once. So this is about mean phi prime. This can be also understood as the width of the spectral function. So if I calculate the spectral function in real time, so it's a Fourier transform of the spectral function in its usual frequency representation. So this width of the spectral function or the decay rate of this real-time representation will correspond to that time scale. This corresponds to the thing that you get also from linear response. And this slow processes actually correspond to those physics where you cannot cut these diagrams, you cannot put the propagators here on the shell, but you have to iterate once more. And then if these propagators are on the shell, then you will have a higher order process. And this turns out to be very important for thermalization, because this doesn't, although this describes particle scattering already, it doesn't bring to the desired final equilibrium state. Good.
How do you arrive at those conclusions? I mean, those diagrams are in the width for the spectral functions.
Yes. So
are you saying that this late behavior just has to do with global particle number changing?
No.
This
I don't want to say. So for me it was very interesting that although there is a fast process here, this doesn't bring us to the equilibrium, although it is fast, and there is a slower process which clearly is from higher order diagrams if you really want to think of diagrams.
Usually, the classical Bogolyubov's hierarchy of times puts this single particle time as the longest, and this would be the long term. So how come you jump over and rearrange those times? I mean, the slowest, normally in the system, the correlations, higher order correlations are the first to equilibrate, and then the last to equilibrate are single particle degrees of freedom. And you somehow claim that the late evolution is due to the high order diagrams.
Well, good. So, what I only know is if I calculate these diagrams, they are higher order in coupling. So if I just calculate time scales from this, it will be order coupling to the fourth.
I think what you want to say is there is a time scale which is typically called the relaxation time. Mm-hmm. So think of a system where you have thermal equilibrium and just you kick out one mode, mm-hmm. just slightly disturb the equilibrium, then it relaxes back. Mm-hmm. That gives you a relaxation time, which is, for instance, given by the imaginary part of your self energy.
The slowest will be hydrodynamic modes, but since your fuel system is uniform, you don't have hydrodynamic.
Yeah, and he's just saying that this characteristic time scale. Mm-hmm. He identifies with this second line. So if you would do naive.
This should be the single particle time. This should be the single naive.
Yeah, and he just says that thermalization in those cases where it has been studied, takes much longer.
I think the argument is that there's more than one time scale that's showing up in single particle.
This I understand, but then the attributing of physics to this, I just, to me it's arbitrary. And I don't believe it. I mean, that's and the way I would study, if you were to make such claims, I would take the system, I would evolve it first for a long time to make sure it's equilibrated, and then to take an external current and disturb it. And then take different currents, disturb the system in different ways, and then we will have different relaxations.
Yes. Good. If I excite the system with an external current,
everything on top of each other, and you don't know which what is what.
The funny thing is that we do have these situations, for instance, after inflation, mm-hmm. where you cannot wait until you're close to equilibrium and then excite the mode where your linear response is valid.
This is very good, but that's what you have models for, where you can do things, you're God and you dictate the initial condition. And then you understand what is what.
Good. So clearly, in this model, if I excite it with an external current, for example, mm-hmm. that can be done. If I am in isotropy, an equilibrium, if I bring it with an isotropic external current out of equilibrium, mm-hmm. then one can actually describe the isotropization, for example. Mm-hmm. And that will go exactly with this rate.
So you have here pressing of bare particles into composite particles.
Yes.
You have particle production. You have equilibration of the.
This is all mixed here.
Radial distribution of momentum. So you have everything.
Yes.
And I don't know which term is which, and I'm sorry to say, but I don't think you know.
So let me ask a rephrasing of this. I understand that much of your real motivation is to study problems that are far from equilibrium.
Yes.
But suppose you were to apply exactly what you said to a case where you're only slightly displaced from equilibrium. Suppose it's a simple scalar 5-4 theory, weak coupling lambda.
Yeah.
Is it true that the time scale for your first portion that you call dephasing is square root lambda t, where t really is just a synonym for the typical energy density to one fourth, and the next time scale is lambda square t. Okay, and beyond that, this is now lambda cubed t for
if you have a mass, then lambda fourth, in the massive theory.
So to the first...
Mm-hmm. Yes? Good, so if I'm close to equilibrium, then I can use linear response. Mm-hmm. And I did not check all the possible cases, but where I did, this was the relevant time scale for a single excitation to go back to equilibrium.
Okay, and then
I didn't observe.
Your slow stuff beyond that would then be particle number changing processes?
Particle number changing processes are surely in this range. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what else is here. And because it's not that the distribution is fully thermal with some chemical potential. No, it's not like that. It's almost close to thermal, but not really. So there is some thermalization going on, kinetic equilibration also going on there. Now, which was surprising to me, but that's how I saw.
So I think, this has been studied in great detail, and particularly this lambda square t time scale, that if you just kick out a single mode and relax back to thermal equilibrium, it's really that time scale also what you observe from this. I think what was striking is that for a very large range of far from equilibrium phenomena, you again found this time scale as a characteristic time scale in the sense that if you start from different initial conditions, after the time scale, the system loses most of the information about the initial conditions. So what he tried to, they come close. Afterwards, they're not thermal, but it's still also far from equilibrium. This relaxation time scale is a very important time scale because it tells you how quickly you forget the details about the initial conditions. It's if you have an unequal time correlator, phi of t, phi of 0, when that goes exponentially to 0.
Mm-hmm.
So it stays a characteristic of time scale also for the very large class of far from equilibrium conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And then these long time scale people usually attribute to, as you said, particle number changing processes, which count as lambda to the 4.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is settled. Yes, we had some indication that it's not, certainly it goes into it, but
I think that this is not implausible, but I would try and prove it by running the system to equilibrium and then disturbing it in a manner which changes the particle number or not. And then looking at whether you have a difference.
Good, so clearly there will be a difference if the excitation out of equilibrium is large. So because then we are back at this situation. Of course, then the propagator will be already dressed.
But with this, correlations will be already relaxed. If you have a particle which if you disturb it with a current that couples to single particle degrees of freedom, then you
yes.
don't disturb correlations. Or I mean, there is always
you
some
could.
Effect, but you will at least the correlations you will
good.
Know will be largely
so
relaxed.
So this relaxation time is based on an assumption or can be. Yeah, so it can be based on the assumption that everything is thermal and only one degree of freedom is out of equilibrium. And of course, the whole bulk will drive it back to equilibrium. Here, yeah, if all the degrees of freedom are away from equilibrium, then you have to be more careful and more phenomena will be there. What is striking is still the very same close to equilibrium time scale is also relevant here. Although we have no reason to assume that we can calculate a diagram with equilibrium propagators, just because it just happens to be in these studies cases that this time scale is not very far from what we have here at this point. So it has the same energy density and maybe other bulk features. So the time scale that we get here is as an order of magnitude similar to what we have here.
Maybe what one should also say, because people are so insistent that one should calculate just this first or the second, and you are counting time scale as the thermalization time scale, it's very difficult not to wait first very long time and then to kick out a mode and recover this time scale as a thermalization time scale. It's very difficult from any generic initial condition that doesn't have to be crazily far from equilibrium to really find lambda squared t as a thermalization time scale. It was very untypical to associate lambda squared t as a thermalization time scale, which means it's not so. You have to do something to come to the linear response regime. As you said, for instance, you first have to wait a long time, mm-hmm. and you don't have to excite many modes.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few modes, and rather quickly you realize that you get other time scales into the problem. So certainly, I think that's interesting, that mm-hmm. lambda squared times t as the thermalization time scale may be a bit too optimistic if you think about generic class of initial conditions. Of course, it's very difficult to pin that down, because you have, for the second time scale, well, it's hard to associate it only to particle number changing processes.
No, it's definitely not, because the distribution is not thermal. Whatever. Another interesting detail, just before we proceed, that one can actually, of course, try to trade this, the full 2pi equations, we do not use gradient expansion to actually derive gradient expanded transport equations that describe the same model. Of course, there are many, many details that one has to go through. What was amazing in a study that we made with Jürgen a few years ago, that if we just do the gradient expansion, then about from this time, grade, when we solve the when we solve the transport equations, which are with gradient expansion, from about this time we had a fairly good description. One can of course further approximate gradient expanded transport equation, dropping all the Poisson brackets. I don't really want to write down the full equation because that's rather cumbersome, but there is usually a strictly on-shell part, and there is a part which are with the Poisson brackets, advanced and retarded propagators therein, whereas there are no advanced propagator in the first part. And if I just keep the on-shell or the lowest order part, then I don't have a proper description at this range. So if that would actually just mean that that I consider the two-to-two scattering, of course. If I keep the full second part, which is still a gradient expanded part, then I have a very good description of this thermalization.
I'd like to understand this better. So
good. Maybe I brightened that question.
Are you saying that a kinetic theory that only keeps two particle scattering is not a good description? Or are you claiming that a kinetic theory that properly accounts for all collisions isn't a good approximation in that?
You have to consider all collisions that are relevant. You can build up a kinetic theory where you have the processes you want, but it's very nice that 2PI gives that automatically without much effort. So if you... I'm trying to think of a good example.
It's as long as you put in the processes that are relevant at late times, it must be correct. It's no question.
So just...
Is that your question? I think there's no question about this, and I think
and the domain of validity should be that same line where
it starts after lambda squared t. So we found that whenever you do a gradient expansion, it seems not to work before the time scale, the relaxation time scale. So I would phrase it the other way around as you did. I don't have any problem at late times. It has to work then. But it's just a question at what time can you start doing a kinetic description. And we found that the earliest time when you can do it is given by the time after lambda squared t.
Yes,
I think it can be understood also quite intuitively. That's the time scale which you need to forget the details about the initial conditions. So that's where your unequal time two-pi function, phi of t, phi of 0, goes to 0.
Yes, now you just...
And if you derive kinetic equations from quantum field theory, you always assume that you can send the initial time to minus infinity. So you, whenever you write down a Boltzmann equation, you do assume the loss of correlations with the initial state.
Sure, but I still find the claim that I have to wait for time that's, 1 over lambda squared t surprising. I mean, that's a mean free time for collisions.
Yes.
Kinetic theory should be happy on shorter time scales where effectively you just have free streaming of excitations as long as you're on times large compared to what really is dephasing, which should be parametrically shorter if lambda is small. So I'm puzzled by what you say.
If you derive kinetic theory from quantum field theory, you always have in a memory integral with an initial time. If you derive then the kinetic theory, what you do is you send this initial time to minus infinity. Otherwise, you wouldn't get the kinetic equations. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, you send the initial time to minus infinity, but you initialize your kinetic equation at some finite time. So you say, I start at time 0, but the memory integral is sent to minus infinity. Mm-hmm. That has nothing to do with a gradient approximation or mean free path. It's just an additional assumption that we make to get an easy form of our kinetic theory. So it's that part. If you send the in the memory integral, the initial time to minus infinity, but you initialize your theory at the finite time.
But this is the same thing as saying, what's the time scale over which you have significant quantum correlations that are not captured by simply saying, here's my distribution of classical quasiparticles.
Yes, but isn't it the time where your unequal time two-point function, so the overlap of your field at time t with a field at time zero, goes to zero? Isn't it that time?
It must depend on the initial condition.
It's, yes.
But the details about the initial conditions are lost after lambda squared, 1 over lambda squared.
If you consider a most general initial condition, that then you have to consider this. We picked one, and then the difference was striking. Of course, if you fine-tune your initial condition so that this effect is negligible, then you have a good description from zero time. But if you have an unknown initial condition, then you have to wait until you can use this kinetic description.
So what's the time scale of your wiggles in your first region?
This was a microscopic time scale. What I observe is T in the scalar theory.
This is dread because the initial state here is specified in terms of is an uncorrelated state of bare particles. And those particles dress.
Yes.
And then so the self-energies relax and then kinetic theory starts.
Yes.
And then this late time would be this late long-term tail would be the tail of chemical reactions basically because you go to some threshold or below threshold for production.
Yes. Well, yes. So, good. Third thing is mixed with this part, but it's not just the asymptotics of the propagator that goes into this game because it's very infrared. So, in the infrared, we also find deviations from the kinetic description.
You always emphasize that one starts with an undressed state.
Yes.
I mean, suppose you do these things in classical statistical field theory. You don't have quantum corrections, but you do have the same diagrams.
Yes.
You find the same things also with you know, non-Gaussian initial conditions. You see, nobody, for instance, after inflation, a Gaussian initial state is the initial condition to look at. It's a funny thing to say this is something artificial. It's exactly what happens if you have the expansion of the universe diluting any matter content you have.
Correct, but the point is that the higher order functions evolve as well, right? It's not like there is a fiat and you know because in the kernel of Bayes equations which you solve, if you started at finite time. And there is no prehistory over which reveals itself as in consequences of what happens after t equals zero. Then you means you simplified it. You erase that history. If in classical mechanics you would relax the higher order correlations. Would assume that they are relaxed under the constraint of under the constraint of specific single particle variables, and you start. This is specified in terms of single particle variables, but the correlations are relaxed to them. You don't say that there are no correlations in the system, and then you start evolving the system. And if you let's say you have a hard core and you say well, I haven't relaxed the correlation, and this you put infinite energy into the system will just explode. I mean, in statistical mechanics, you this is also a problem, and you take care of it. And the typical argument is why you can take care of it, because the evolution, the characteristic times governing the evolution of the higher point functions are shorter than those which govern single particle.
So if I start at some definite time with all those higher correlators just set to zero,
then
you evolve, you have some initial transience when those, which is precisely your dressing.
Yes.
And the only question is, what is the characteristic time scale of those initial transients, which basically you're probably not interested in.
Yes, and was it realistic to put this particular in a circle? Because, you know, this simplifies the equations for solving. Is this the good justification?
Yeah. Why, for instance, after inflation, I mean, you're exactly interested in such an initial state that has, it's practically Gaussian. It's a pure state. I mean,
first of all, that's a very special application where it's certainly very close to Gaussian. Right? There is now a great deal of interest in corrections to Gaussianity. So when you just say, you know, we've been inflating, we're not going to worry about that, you know, we've started to fall off the end of the slow roll cliff, and boom, right now, let's start our evolution. I mean, surely there's something artificial to that.
No, in classical statistical theory, you don't have to do that. You can also start from non-Gaussian states. And, I mean, we did that even
But I think all Pavel is saying is, unless you really know in gory detail everything about the physics controls those non-Gaussian states, you're just making some crude guess when you start, and you shouldn't be surprised.
There are transients and the characteristic time scale. You have to wait to not be sensitive to the details about the initial conditions is lambda squared t. That's all we're saying.
That should be much too long.
Yeah. Okay, but this is the time scale you need to forget the details about the initial conditions. This is the time scale where the two-point function, phi of t and phi of 0, the overlap with the initial state, goes exponentially to 0. I mean, what is so surprising about
it? Larry, you're saying that it should be that earlier dephasing scale?
Well, it should be in between.
Okay.
Compared to dephasing, but I should have
Good, at least in the scalar theory, I don't think
it's scattering to happen.
Yeah.
Good.
But so the variety of feed theories that we considered in various dimensions showed this. Let it be fermions, let it be 3 plus 1, 1 plus 1.
Good, that
might be. Are you saying all the information about the initial conditions should be forgotten on a time scale much shorter than lambda squared t?
No, and that's maybe part of the issue about that we're saying.
I think you may be talking about two different things when you're defining what the time scale.
I'm saying when you can start treating it as kinetic theory, which if you're still in a free-streaming regime, still has sensitivity to initial conditions, but it's a much more limited sensitivity than the complete off-shell information.
Well, you're saying there should be something in between lambda squared t and t, one over there.
Yeah.
Good, that could be in some theories.
Kinetic theory, but starting with some distribution that depends on your initial.
So what is your estimate, Larry? What would you say in lambda 5/4 that time scale is?
Something certainly large compared to 1 over t. I think I need large compared to 1 over lambda t.
Because that's a collision time.
No, it's not. Collision time is lambda squared.
Lambda squared, okay. What is the significance of lambda t?
That's the size of shifts in the real part of self energies.
Which is some sort of infrared screening scale.
Well, except it's lambda t squared, so I think I want root lambda t. Mm-hmm. That's
lambda t is the tetpole. And of course all these dressing effects also come from the sunset diagram. Same order of magnitude. So even afterwards, there will be.
But what do you mean? It's not the same order of magnitude if you're looking at real parts.
Yes. Whereas sunset is lambda squared, but otherwise.
Okay. Have you tried applying kinetic theory in various points in between?
I mean, we did a great deal of study.
We should mention that thing. That with the isotropization, that there was one observable, which was the propagator, this direction, minus the propagator, that direction. And that, of course. It had a behavior like that, and that was the lambda squared t. And even here, we could use some kind of What was it?
Okay, maybe this is
also correct. I don't want to draw this conclusion, but I had the impression that the kinetic description so was varied around this time already.
So you say square root of lambda t, that's the time scale it should be.
We can well, large compared to that.
It can be that, I mean, in those numerical studies, to go to very, very small couplings is not easy. So it can be, if you really go to very small couplings, you still find that there is a difference between this lambda squared, seemed to be lambda squared t, that I won't copy. I mean, that could still be definite.
How low coupling were you using?
0.1.
Oh,
well, so then you have to really define what is in front.
But you see, I mean, I think these statements that Eric was making is a good statement. If you really go to weak couplings, that numerics is difficult.
That's a real issue. Yeah. When do you enter that weak coupling domain?
But I think we should proceed to other topics as well because this is not the only interesting thing. I will come back to the initial conditions a little bit later on. Good. So. Yeah, we already saw from the discussion that 2PI can bring us a lot of understanding, especially when we compare it to some transporter kinetic theory, that even in equilibrium, 2PI can bring us some benefit. And, well, there were some talks by McCarrington and also Katas was here. They work on transport coefficients of various models. QED, for example, or large enough QCD, or vector models. I don't really have working experience in that field. What I actually did is thermodynamics. So one can actually calculate 2PI thermodynamics for a model of interest. And, well, I plan to spend the whole talk, now it's almost over, with QED. In and out of equilibrium. So if we are in equilibrium, then we can get the pressure from relatively simple formula. I have to calculate the 2PI effective action at the 2PI propagator and divide by the volume, the full volume, and then it will give me a curve where there's a coupling dependence. And there's a pressure over pressure ideal. And of course, in the free theory it's 1, and then it goes down rapidly with the coupling. If I have standard perturbation theory, then E cube order gives this. Then, Andersen and Strickland many people try to improve that. Andersen and Strickland calculated actually this pressure, but they realized that of course it's gauge parameter dependent. So they re-expanded the pressure in coupling and screening mass.
Well, what is gauge parameter dependent?
I have to fix. So, all right.
You mean specifically the pressure as calculated?
Pressure.
2PI.
Is that pressure depends on the loop order, the coupling, temperature, and the gauge fixing parameter. Good. Of course, you know that if n is sent to infinity, then this gauge parameter dependence will be 0. But if I keep it n equals 2 or 3, then there will be some remnant psi dependence. So they re-expanded this. So the Taylor expansion of this expression in terms of E. And then from this expansion, they dropped everything which was gauge parameter dependent. So they stopped with this re-expansion at some point so that the result is still useful. And they what they found from, so they included this diagram and that diagram, and there their curve they had this shaded area, which was actually this renormalization scale dependence, and their curve was correct up to e to the fifth order. And it was already a much better behavior than standard perturbation theory to this order. So this band was smaller. So what was striking when we calculated with Urco-Reinoza this plainly this diagram, but without the re-expansion, and then our results were of course gauge fixing dependent, then the band that we got is something like this. Now I have to explain. So this is correct up to E cube order only, but still very different from the perturbative E cube order. This is because this pressure, if it would expand in E, of course it has lots and lots of contribution from high powers of E. So if I don't do this re-expansion, then the behavior of the curve is really nice. And now I have to explain what is this band. This band is Feynman gauge. The upper part of the band is psi equals 1, and low is psi equals 0. So basically, the renormalization scale dependence is not that particularly important in our case, but the gauge fixing dependence is. And yet, well, of course, if we are clever enough to make this limit where we cut the gauge fixing parameter, this 1, then we have a definitely smaller band than from this re-expanded approach of a higher order calculation. So if we really do 2PI consistently, then it can save us diagrams. Good.
Why do you look at psi equals 0 and 1 and not arbitrary?
I mean, if I take psi equals 100,
is that in between,
then it will be something like that. And we know from analytical calculation, Jan Smith and Arisa Balaga did that psi equals 0, the smaller psi is, the smaller the longitudinal degrees of freedom are, and they are not resummed in the same manner as transversal. So with lower psi, it is more resummed. There is some argument like this. And one can also check the small but observable renormalization scale dependence of psi equals 0, psi equals 1, or psi equals 2. The renormalization scale dependence is smallest in this case, a bit larger in that case, and then it gives an error of a calculation.
So you said, what happens if psi equals 2? Is it really quantum?
No, it's still lower. It's psi equals 2.
So what is this? Do you have to go to 100? Just to see the sensitivity.
I think that was the 10. Good. So if I calculate the mu dependence, that gives a kind of hint of error. And that error is very much telling us how we should believe the result. And since this mu dependence was really small for these low gauges, that's gave my confidence to really use them.
So the strong sensitivity on psi, at what coupling values did disappear? At order 1?
Good, so now you see the scales, it is 1, it is 2.
So if you go to order 1?
So if I'm order 1, then it's not very significant. Of course, this is a parametric thing that E cube should be correct even then. Yeah, if psi is very big, then I guess it would spoil also the behavior here.
For any finite E, if you take C large enough, right?
I just have one hint, the renormalization scale dependence that makes me believe that's a numerical evidence that makes me believe that this should be better than others. Good.
Can you do three loop?
Well, the reason. good. So not maybe definitely won't have time, but I would like to make an estimate, give an estimate what the high loop will cost, and it's much, much harder but feasible. So this was runs on a laptop, and if you want to make more integrals, then there is a or cluster in Sussex will do that, but not my laptop. So it is a different scale if one machine in 10 minutes or a supercomputer in a day. So, but feasible.
So for that cycle diagram, you need a supercomputer for a day?
50 minutes. 50 minutes left or 50? Good. So, anyway.
Get something to eat before he gets home.
Yeah. Good. Let's give some details. Well, of course, it's a discussion, so there's nothing that I have to cover. Cover what there is need for. Good. So actually, let's think of real time. So real time physics is, and let's do QED in real time. Let's solve the non-equilibrium behavior in QED, because that's, so if we have one diagram, which is actually, I can write two self-energy diagrams for QED, then these already describes most of the phenomena that I really want to. And these are the cheap things to calculate. All previous 2PI calculations were two-loop. Of course, it's not true in a strict sense, but numerically two-loop calculations. So everything could be reduced to two-loop. And then it's cheap, then it runs on a laptop, even in non-equilibrium. Good. And then I have to introduce G mu nu. And now I'm just telling that there are some technical details which someone who wants to be involved has to know. We usually decompose the propagator in a symmetric and an antisymmetric part, and the symmetric is real, the antisymmetric is imaginary. That's why we pull out this thing here. And very similar for the fermion part. Good. So this is the spectral function. This characterizes the number of quasi-particles or just the size of the excitation. And then we calculate from this the self-energies, and the equation that we have to solve are plainly, I just write down the equation for this part, for simplicity, everyone can imagine or ask for me the equations for the other part. So for the fermions, it is mi ki minus sigma 0 of time d rho t1 t3 k is from time 3 to time 1 dt2 sigma rho t1 t2 k d rho t2 t3 k. So the structure of this equation is the following. Here we have a Klein-Gordon-like equation. So every time step, I have to calculate this Klein-Gordon operator for each t3. And then there is an integral here along t2. So for each t3, I have to calculate an integral. So one time step the combinational requirement for one time step is t squared, and sorry for this t. This t is not temperature. This t is the length of the memory integral, which has a typical scale, which I will tell you how long it could be. And then it is, and there is a volume. Good? And so this is not big. when I started doing 2pi, or when Jünger started doing 2pi, it was a big number. Now it reduced by the size of computers. So it now runs on a laptop.
So t squared, because you're summing, you're doing your time integral for every value of...
Yes. So this brings a t, and this integral gives another t. And this brings a b, and this is the same momentum everywhere. When I calculate this thing, so this is actually calculating that diagram, then what we do is we go hop into Fourier space, so it is a v log v t time for each time 2. We have to Fourier transform this, and then Fourier transform d t 1 t 2 x, and also the gauge field, and then simply multiply them, and that will give us sigma t1 t2. And this is the great simplicity of 2pi calculations when there is only one loop, or actually it's not a single one loop, just two vertices. Good, and then it goes back to momentum space with the same number of steps. This multiplication is really cheap. This is tv. So from this one, one simply has that this is the most, this is the slowest path, the memory integral.
And are you really putting a cutoff on k that amounts to something like a lattice?
Good. So far, most people use the lattice discretization because it's just very well defined, robust. Good. So k can be on a lattice. Or one can actually imagine the propagator t as just a function of if there is isotropy. It can be a function of the distance of from the origin. And in this case, it's not only that we have less points in momentum space. The Fourier transformations are equally simple to carry out, almost equally simple. There are more elaborate routines, but the time scale is still the same. So it can bring us a factor of 100 about if we really do that. In addition, we can use some tensor structure which we don't have on a lattice. So if we have...
But is it an approximation? Do you solve an isotropic problem or an anisotropic problem?
Depending on what. One, actually, that... Most numerical studies were for isotropic problems, but the numerics is fully capable of an isotropy. We once also solved an isotropic problem.
If you make it isotropic,
yes,
the propagator, then is it an approximation or is it...
No, it's...
Because presumably even in an anisotropic problem, the dominant part is isotropic or...
Well, if it's an isotropic problem, then we treat it anisotropically. Mm-hmm. If the initial conditions are isotropic, then it will stay isotropic, and then we can use this deform hysteresis. If there is approximate anisotropy, then we don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's say stay self-consistent. So, and there are lots of symmetries. We have CP symmetry, or CP and time reflection symmetry too. And if we have that, let's take that granted. We can have isotropy, and we can have, most importantly, which brings really a lot of simplification, is chiral symmetry. So a d, which is a alpha prime, this is a 4x4 Lorentz matrix. It has a scalar, pseudo-scalar, vector, axial vector, and tensor component. So this actually, this p, well, in the isotropic case, we can get rid of much of the gamma 5 matrices here. If there are more than one vertices, then not really. Isotropy actually gives us that everything has to follow the tensor structure expressed by one vector. And the chiral symmetry is a big hit because only the V and A components can survive. And the full 2pi dynamics preserves this chiral symmetry, of course, if there is no mass and the regularization.
These are factor of two issues, which can be very important practically, but in terms of scaling...
In terms of scaling, they are not important. In terms of programming time, it can be scaling. It can. If I don't have this, then maybe I'm frightened off and never do that. Good? Good. So I just want to say that this will be a D. If I have isotropy, then only the DV component will be there. Good? So, and then if there is one component, then it is like a scalar theory. So if it's like a scalar theory, then I do it. Otherwise, who knows? Good. How about gauge fields? This was one equation for the fermions, and now maybe you want me to show that I know the gauge of the photon equations. So, I'm sorry, but I'm pushed by time. I just use one gauge. You can open a discussion after Emil's talk, maybe. Which gauge is the best? So from this plot, one could guess that Landau gauge is really good. But Feynman gauge is also good. It's also in the vicinity. So let me use the Feynman gauge, which saves lots of troubles. And G rho mu. So the structure of the integral is really the same. And now these are just matrix multiplications, which are easy to program and easy to and doesn't change the scaling. So with the very same amount of time, this is the thing to calculate. And well, there are similar equations for the other component. And the reason for Feynman gauge is that it's really all the degrees of freedom can be treated like the other ones. So I don't have to make a distinction about other things. And yeah, I could also preserve a psi, but then the equations will be a little bit more complicated. Good. Now, how much time do I have? It's finished?
60-something
minutes. Good. So maybe we should stop at this point. Maybe there's one table that I have. Good. Whoever wants to leave, then should. But I think this one question should not be unanswered. Can we do 2pi resummed? I mean this d gamma dAA. Can we do 3pi or 3pi in equilibrium? So let's say that... all right, so I skip how I calculated it.
You certainly have to give a loop order or something.
Good. So obviously if I'm 2pi, then I would like to be self-consistently complete. So I only take this one. In 3pi, 3 loop. Everything calculated for QED. Well, I didn't bother for QCD. And for equilibrium, then I have the time translation symmetry. So the answer was for this is there's a 10 to the 5 units of time, which I need for this kind of resummation for a reasonable lattice. So which instead of having on a laptop, I really need a supercomputer for that.
Well, what is 10 to the 5 multiplying?
Oh, yes. Times 2pi
laptops.
Good. But 3pi, so this will be a teraflop machine.
So it would be necessary. This factor 10 to the 5 comes from taking the resummed 2pi?
Yes. So this vertex resummation. And an additional factor of about 100 comes if the vertex has a time dependence, which is the case in 3pi. So it is marginally feasible if you really want to do. It is not yet, but this means that in a couple of years, maybe 3 or 5 years, there will be supercomputers in X that we can use. So BlueJean can already do that, but we have no access. So we have to wait until it becomes accessible for human beings. Good.
I would say BlueJean is more like 10 to the 5 laptops rather than 10 to the 7.
good. We also can trade that no, my code on a laptop runs 10 minutes. And
so there's this change.
If you are willing to wait one week.
So suppose one is happy to do what you do when you make a gradient expansion. So you don't care about these very early instances of time. Then the equations change. You don't get the t squared factor anymore.
Yes, then instead of a t squared, I have a t.
And that changes, of course, a lot here.
Then at least two orders of magnitude will be one, which means that a small cluster will do that. And this, I didn't check if I can do this trick twice. I'm not sure. But at least you get two orders of magnitude with the gradient expansion, which should work fine. Good. 3PI equilibrium, well, let's stop here. I just said it's a small cluster, so for example, ours in Sussex can do it. Equilibrium has the nice feature that all the, so there's no time, there's time translation invariance, so we have metrics of freedom. If you use all the symmetries, a small cluster can calculate it today. So if, and this holds not only for the, so it's the full 2PI summation that one can use also for QCD. So if one is really interested in a good QCD calculation in equilibrium, one can go ahead, one can have the result. There's nothing wrong with that. Only problem is that lattice sizes could be not big enough if you really want to save time. So the infrared features of the propagators, I'm not sure if you will really get. Hot features will be there. Good. So I stop here. Thank you very much for your patience.
So two comments. One is
you cut your time for your talks.
Yes, yeah, that's life. Right?
20 minutes to go grab some food.
Two comments. First of all, I give a talk before you came here, and so I have a different approach to this, which I think would be less computation intensive.
Yeah.
Because 3PI takes an awful lot of stuff into account that I think is perhaps overkill, but we should talk about that.
Yes.
And second thing is, BlueJean is being used for physics calculations. Monte Carlo's
not me.
Not by you, yes, but so.
Yes, maybe, so they had a reason.
We should talk about that too.
Select humans.
Select, yeah, humans. So I would really.
Well,
like
I'm happy to discuss the computational demands of 3PI. What can be a really great advantage that one can use one could use Monte Carlo integration of the three loop integrals, because that's really time consuming here, and this has so far, I think it was not used. Maybe that is. Perturbation theory, not resumption. They used, I think, Monte Carlo techniques, but not here. And if we do so, then we really got a factor 1,000 maybe by that.
So would you just clarify what you're actually doing for your 2PI resummed variations? That's doing a second variation?
So then I have to solve this vertex resummation. This diagram. And if I have the diagram, that's the three-point diagram, then from this one can calculate, then I use this. And add the free inverse propagator, and that will be that. So in non-equilibrium, it is just like a self-energy. I have to use the very same equation as I used here. Yeah, and then I only have to evaluate these three-point diagrams with this and this being.
Which means you've got to invert the appropriate linear kernel.
Yeah. It is not a terrible, I think.
Because you're assuming homogeneity.
In space, yes.
In space.
Yes. Yes.
But isn't that still then scaling like, and so that kernel is what, effectively T by T?
So I have to pick
for each value of
so this
K.
Is this point I fix mm-hmm. in time mm-hmm. and also fix in momentum mm-hmm. and then I have to calculate for any two points, so this brings me a T squared I know as a v squared. V squared because I have to fix this for all the possible points. And this is one t, this is another t. This time is fixed. This is the most recent time.
That's fine, but to actually solve this equation, that's equivalent to inverting a matrix. And I mean, inverting an n by n matrix costs n cubed. Where's that n cubed?
Sorry, I'm not inverting them. Good.
Aren't you solving the self-consistently to resum all
yes.
the rainbows?
Yes, it's a linear equation. And you... No. So now we have to decide, are we in equilibrium or out of equilibrium? In equilibrium, we have to do matrix computation if we want to have it in one step. Alternatively, we can use iterative techniques, and then this is the time that I calculated for an iteration.
One iteration.
And then, since it's a linear equation, very few iterations will bring you to the solution, not n.
Okay. If
so this
kernel's is nice enough. Okay.
Good. That we have to really check that I cannot tell. But so for example also the beta Salpeter equation how we solved, we didn't really have to invert matrices. Just 2-5 iterations. That was all. Good, so that can save time. In real time, however, equations tend to be explicit because we always calculate the most recent time and then there is one iteration per time, so no iteration, just one calculation per time step. And that's, again, a time-saving thing.
In a sense, real-time equations are more efficient than equilibrium.
Yeah, of course, but you need more degrees of freedom.
Implicit in time, you never have to solve a self-consistent equation. It's causality.
Yeah, but you just
so
have
you just
to,
make
keep,
sums
you have
on the
to
computer.
Just keep track of all the
yeah,
times.
The bad thing
right.
about non-equilibrium is it's t squared.
You have to.
Which, when you would go to gradient expansions, no longer be there. So
yes.
You're talking about time steps in terms of speed, but what about memory? If you have to keep a lot of, that also runs into problems, right?
For this, the memory, the storage is that, t squared v squared.
Yeah.
For a standard calculation, this is t squared v. But if you go from to a cluster from a PC, you get a factor of 100, which can discompensate for that. Actually, but there is an important thing which you don't have to be here. So it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
So this propagate this resummed 2PI resum propagator doesn't enter into this diagram. So you don't really need to calculate this for all possible momenta. Just what you are interested in. Yeah? Because it is fully all the momenta fully decoupled. So here you pick those three momenta you are interested in, and this gives you an additional factor of I don't know how much, which I didn't consider there in that estimate. Yeah, so it's really within range.
So we should see 3PI equilibrium calculations in another year or two.
Yeah, depending on who you hire.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.